We've got a fantastic second keynote speaker, Professor Rob Miller. So Rob is the Chair in Aerothermal Technology, Director of the Whittle Lab at the University of Cambridge, Director of the Rolls-Royce Whittle University Technology Centre at the University of Cambridge as well. He's also a member of the Department for Transport Science Advisory Council. Now, his research focuses on the decarbonisation of the aerospace and power generation sectors and works closely with industry in his work. Now, having spoken to Rob, having looked at some of his work, he's led a number of really amazing initiatives over the years, which provide a huge amount of insight into how we might accelerate the development of solutions to tackle climate change. And he's learned a lot from these lessons, a lot of lessons from these experiences. So with that, I hand over to you, Rob, and I really look forward to your talk.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Okay, so thank you for the kind introduction. Really, everything I'm going to talk about today hopefully is going to end up in the building you can see behind you on the first slide, which really everything we've sort of learned at the Whittle Lab has been put into this new building, which we hope will enable us to drive innovative solutions at pace and scale to tackle the climate crisis in flight and land-based power. Next slide. So to give you a bit of background to the Whittle Laboratory, I think it's summed up by this photograph you can see. And this is the opening of the lab 50 years ago. And you can see Frank Whittle in the middle. And really, the team around him are his mostly Cambridge team who went off and invented the jet engine in 1937. You can see on the left, there's Sir John Horlock, who did a lot of the early design methods at Rolls and was first director of the lab. On his direct right, you've got Sir William Hawthorne, who developed the combustion chamber on the first engine, head of engineering in Cambridge. And on the far right, Bob Fielden of King's College, Cambridge, who led his Whittle's design team and then went off and founded land-based gas turbines at Rustons, now Siemens UK and Lincoln. And the importance of this slide, I think, is that these people were as happy in academia as they were in industry, and they crossed the boundaries frequently. And that was really the driving influence to a lot of the technologies, the primary technologies in universities, making it into the product over the last sort of 50 years. We've built at the Whittle Lab on this. On the right, you'll see Rolls-Royce, Mitsubishi and Siemens, and we've been major industrial partners of theirs for 50 years, Dyson for 8 years, Boeing, Lilium and Reaction Engines recently. And pre-pandemic, any day, you'd walk into the Whittle Lab and around the tea table, you would see designers from these companies. And similarly, if you were in these companies, you'd see Whittle Lab people hanging around. The Whittle Lab brings in just under 10% of the entire university's industrial income. And, you know, many people would say you either do sort of industrially focused work or academic research. But for us, it's brought sort of academic success. The big prize in the field is called the Gas Turbine Award, given once a year by the American Society of Mechanical Engineers since 1963. And the Whittle Lab has won it 10 out of the last 16 years. And I think that really is down to those industrial links, allowing us to find the real problems. Okay, next slide. So what's the problem that government, industry, academic boundary is trying to tackle? Well, we have to decarbonize by 2050, as you know. And this is an interesting graph you can see here. The y-axis is CO2 emissions from aviation. And then you've got year on the x-axis. And the solid red line you can see is a fit to data. The dashed red line going forward is the ICAO's prediction of what the emissions from aviation will be. So you see it nearly doubling by 2050. And that graph has got in it an assumption of a 2% improvement in reduction in fuel burn per year. And that's tough because over the last sort of 20, 30 years, we've only achieved 1.5% with everybody working really hard. And the graph we've got to get to is the green one. And as any of you know who work in industry, the hardest thing is kinking a graph. You know, there's billions of dollars being put into investment to get the graph even as good as it is. So we're going to have to do something dramatically different if we want to get onto that green curve. Now, I'm going to argue that to decarbonize by 2050, we're going to need to develop more technologies of a wider variety of types in a shorter time scale. So the question is, how do we do that? Next slide. So what happens at present and what is the limit? Why are we on that top graph? Well, the aviation sector has been stable for about 40 years. And that has led to a sector in which the subsystem boundaries, and when I say subsystem boundaries, I mean the divides between the people who make the engines, the people who make the planes, the people who do the airports, or within the companies, the people who design the compressors or just turbines or combustors. Those subsystem boundaries have been frozen for decades. And the result is a research network that has encouraged each person, each silo to specialize and optimize what they're doing. And I'd argue this has two major consequences. So if you look on the left, this is a typical technology development process used by the aerospace industry. And you can see the technology development silos in it. So this shows the y-axis is technology readiness level and the x-axis is years. So somebody has an idea down at year zero and it shows it takes 10 years to get that to a point where you can take it into a product. And the reason for that is you'll see, you know, in the blue, this is like a PhD going on in a specialist lab. And then it moves over to the red. This is a sort of a higher technology readiness level, medium speed rig, so in a different country. And then this might be it coming to a UK aerospace company to do some design. And then it's got the big rig test has to be manufactured. And then it might go off to Germany to test. And this whole process, this siloing and putting it across the boundaries is where the 10 years comes from. And this is not abnormal. So there was a report in 1999 by NASA where they analyzed a range of technologies and they found an average of 8 years. And I can tell you from our work with Mitsubishi or Siemens, this is not unusual. Around 8 years from idea to product is the norm. The second problem's on the right, and that's discipline silos. So typically, if you have an idea for a new zero carbon technology, We've analyzed those technologies, the future ones that will be needed for flight, and we found that 92% of them were highly multidisciplinary in nature. So it's very hard to fit them into any of the research labs at the moment that are relatively specialist. And so I would argue that the current technology development system will take a long time to move these technologies from idea to product and will miss the best solutions in new areas of the design space that don't fit with the silos. Next slide. Okay, so we're gonna try and, I want to show you some progress we're making on these two issues. So first, our success in breaking down technology development silos. This is the idea of taking TRL 0 through to TRL 6. Now, there's a story here because about 8 years ago, I was out with a colleague in Cambridge for a drink, and this colleague or friend was an aero tester at Red Bull, and he asked me what I'd been doing, and at the time, we'd just developed a team of us at the Whittle, the second generation of three-dimensional compressor blades for Rolls-Royce. And I explained how they worked, and he thought they were really good. And then he asked me, when will they make engine? And I said, 6 years. And we sort of sighed. And then I asked him what he'd been doing that day at Red Bull. And he tested 20 rear wings. And he didn't understand how they worked, but he fitted a surface through the results. They predicted what the best was. They built it, tested it. It was the best. and he just emailed it to Track. And this was a Thursday night. And by Track, Red Bull had manufacturing tools. And they made it overnight, and it was on the car for practice the next day. And at that point, the penny dropped. And Tony Dickens, we applied for money for the government, and Tony Dickens left Red Bull. And this is him sitting in one of our technology development teams at the Whittle. And since then, everything at the Whittle has changed. There's two major changes. The first one is that we now run small, sharp, focused teams that help to break down human communication barriers. And you can see one of our teams here made up of industry and academia, multiple disciplines. We remove all top-down management and bureaucracy. Milestones and deliverables go, and we have clear objectives, and which encourages fast, bold action. If you look on the left here, we have what we call a learning loop. Now, this is, you have an idea, and you have to take this idea, you have to design it into a product, make it, test it, and learn. And, you know, we're reasonably good at it at the Whittle, but it was taking us 6 months to go around that loop. And so we focused on each one of the circles. In design, we've moved a lot more towards augmented and AI-based design, running on graphics cards for computer gaming. And that speeded the design process up by more than a factor of 100. In terms of rapid manufacture, 3D printing is very good, but the real breakthrough was to move the supply chain in-house. Actual procurement was the real killer. And we actually connect the manufacturing tools directly to the design tools. So a designer playing with a model can realize a model in the real world in about 8 hours when it did take 3 months. And then finally, we do a value stream analysis on the whole testing process. And we, instead of trying to improve the quality of each bit of the test, the accuracy, we strip out time out of each of the processes. And we found we've changed about 95% or removed 95% of the processes. And we first cut the test times down from months to days. And with pit teams, we can strip, rebuild, and test a rig in 15 minutes. We did a formal trial funded by the Aerospace Technology Institute and with Rolls-Royce in 2017. And we took four technologies from across the Rolls-Royce family around this loop in less than a week. And in 2005, that had taken us 2 years to do. So we'd aimed at 10 times quicker, but we'd ended up at 100 times quicker. And this is really important because, you know, if you're going to explore these new design spaces, compete different design spaces, you've got to fail fast. You've got to have the overhead on taking an idea into products and testing it has got to drop. Okay, next slide. Okay, so now success in breaking down disciplinary silos. I'd like to give you a number of examples. So first of all, on the left, you can see there's a lot of airframe propulsor configurations which are very different than conventional aircraft. And we've had quite a lot of success in putting together structural engineers with electrical engineers and aerodynamicists to tackle those problems right from the beginning of the design process. In the middle, you can see this is work with Lilium on their design system and a company called Blue Bear, a small company in the UK, which is building electric propulsors. And we've done a lot of whole system modeling. And in fact, the bottom one, the Blue Bear example, is a really good one, this one here. This is called a project called Project Inception, funded by the Aerospace Technology Institute. And it involves a series of small companies from sort of Formula One in electric drive teams to people who specialize in batteries, to people who specialize in noise, to the Whittle Lab on aero. And around this team, we're moving geometries from place to place really quickly and changing the way that those problems are tackled. So the rapid technology teams sort of span those problems. And then on the right, we've had quite a lot of success working with the Turing Institute and Rolls-Royce, linking together machine learning and aerodynamics. And you can see in the top left corner, this actually is some work done on damaged blades and the effect they have on engines. And you'll see in this team, you've got a Rolls-Royce fellow, James Taylor. You've got Bryce Conduit, who's one of the senior AI members at Rolls-Royce, and Harry Simpson, who is a Rolls-Royce compressor designer. And they are literally all around the rig. And the AI system is telling them which geometries to test. And they're changing the rig around live to do the test to populate the AI system. So this approach is having sort of impact across a range of areas. Next slide. So I thought I'd give you a little more detail on I think two of the most challenging problems we've taken on in spanning the discipline silos. And the first one was at the start of the pandemic. And this is called the OVZ Ventilator Project, or Open Source Ventilation System Initiative. And the aim here was sort of at the start of the pandemic, when we thought we would need ventilators, we decided that we would put together a team to try and build the first clinical grade ventilator that could work all the way from CPAP through to clinical grade ventilator. Could we do that with it manufactured in Africa at about a tenth of the cost of other ventilators? And we switched our rapid technology development teams over from climate change to the pandemic. And you can see the members of the team. We had in the top circle, these are people from Cambridge departments. We then had people from Adam Brooks, who are specialists in ventilation, and from South Africa, one of their chief medical people. We had startups from the Cambridge cluster who volunteered. And then we had finally big companies such as Beko in Turkey, DeFi in South Africa, Danel in South Africa, and ProDrive, the racing team in the UK. And you can see one of our teams in the photograph. On the left, you can see two Whittle Lab academics. On the right, you see three from startups in Cambridge. And in the background, on the video link, you can see people from DeFi and Danel in South Africa. And so these teams were working virtually and physically on rapidly building components and testing them for the ventilator. And they were successful in the first 20 ventilators came off the production line in South Africa, and the project was awarded a President's Special Award Medal from the Royal Academy of Engineering. Next slide. So here's another one, and this is another challenge. It's called the Aviation Impact Accelerator, and this originated when the Prince of Wales visited the Whittle Lab and ran a round table on decarbonising aviation. And he followed this up with another round table at Clarence House that you can see in the photograph. And the Prince of Wales had been very impressed with the rapid technology teams and said, would it be possible to use these teams to take on the whole systems challenge of how you could unlock change in the larger aviation system? And that's exactly what we've done. So you can see the group of partners here. It has departments from across Cambridge in aerospace, in sustainable leadership, the Judge Business School, the Bennett Institute, Chemical Engineering, BP Institute. But we also have teams from UCL working on the network modeling and Melbourne University working on fuel productions. And this is funded by the World Economic Forum and is in association with the Prince of Wales Sustainable Markets Initiative. And we also have a range of industrial advisors. Now, these aren't industrial advisors that you meet once a year. What we've done here is we have access to the deep technology within those teams. So we're working very closely with the technologists in there to make sure the model's grounded. The aim of the model is to produce a David Mackay model. I don't know, many of you have heard of sustainable energy without the hot air. It's a simple model, but it allows you to look at the whole energy system and of the UK. And we're building a similar system for flight. So it goes from power generation all the way through fuel production, through distribution to the journey. And you can see one of the prototype models up and running here. Next slide. So hopefully you can see some of the success in the past, Going forward, our aim is to build what we understand into a UK integrated technology accelerator. And you can, this is a cut through that building. And I would view that building not as a building, but really as a machine, because every part of it has been designed to try and optimize what I've talked about with technology development silos and discipline silos. Okay, next slide. So first of all, around the central courtyard, we have a range of disciplines. So we are co-locating, as well as aerodynamicists and thermodynamicists, chemistry, policy, electrical, deep learning. The Advanced Manufacture Center in Sheffield will have a satellite office in it to look at the manufacturing. And then we have a challenge space, which allows those people to come together in a digital environment to explore at the early stage the systems design issues of various components with industry. Next slide. So the next thing is we need to embed at the heart of this process training the next generation of leaders in the field. And we have the EPSIRC Center of Doctoral Training in Future Power and Propulsion embedded in the heart of the building. And that will take the first year PhD students from Oxford, Cambridge and Loughborough will all embed themselves that first year in this culture. Next slide. Finally, these teams have got to have access to be able to realize things and test them in the digital world, in the physical world at speed, to then compare them in with the digital world. And so we have the data laboratories, we have the rapid manufacturing capability, we have a rapid assembly garage, and then a test facility which will allow us to move around the space very quickly, rapidly testing concepts. Okay, next slide, please. So this building will cost just under 50 million. We've raised 25 million of it through government, industry and academia. Unfortunately, the pandemic has made the rest of the fundraising incredibly difficult. And if we can't raise the remaining 24.5 million, then quickly, then I'm afraid this project won't happen. So if there's any help on that, please let us know. And you can see there's a link at the bottom that you can look at it'll show you what we're trying to do. Okay, next slide. I thought I would end by just going through some of the things which seem to work. It's very hard to sort of come to firm conclusions, but I can tell you things that work. So the first thing is culture. That's so important. If you don't get the culture right in the building, there's no point in even trying to get pace and simplicity. The second one is to embed real world experience, industry and policy in the teams from day one. So if you get the right industrialists, the right policy people in that team, then you can really ask the right question. Third, make sure your teams are small and sharp focused. That really helps to break down human communication barriers. As soon as you start scaling, the meetings kill you. Four, removal of top-down management and bureaucracy encourages fast, bold action. So you really need to remove milestones and deliverables, and you need to stop all the management meetings, and you need to really focus on allowing the team to move in a flexible way. Fast, focused delivery of funding. So when you find a good opportunity, funding needs to be delivered quickly. So long funding processes don't work. Zero friction legal framework. So you really need, for us, the Rolls-Royce UDT peer relationship is really useful for this, but you need to be able to connect with somebody and start a project within a day, and legal usually stops that. Access to high level industrial strategy. If you're going to ask the right questions, you've got to know what the real problems are. And again, relationships like the one between the Whittle and Rolls are invaluable in that. Finally, light communication overheads. So we tend to run, we only have meetings which are technically focused, and we communicate rapidly in WhatsApp groups. That's much better than having any management meeting. Okay, next slide. So finally, I thought I'd leave you with three questions as you'll be discussing things this afternoon. The first one is funding agility. Funding agility is key. Can funding be based on good taste? So the normal way would be peer review. And when I took over at the Whittle, I back analyzed a lot of the projects which had been successful and made Engine. And what I found, to my surprise, was that the projects which had worked were mostly projects where Rolls-Royce or Mitsubishi had good taste in choosing the person and the projects to do or being involved in that process. And that through peer review. Peer review will not allow you to ask really adventurous questions in that way. So who are you going to trust to put the money in? Second one, operational agility. So can we switch from a milestone and deliverable based world to an objective based world? So if you're going to ask adventurous questions, you've got to change the question frequently. And milestones and deliverables will lock you into one way of seeing the world and so doom you to failure, really. Silo agility is not a great phrase, but you know, if you're going to bridge barriers, either bringing new small companies together with large companies to see the world differently, then there is massive legal barriers in doing that. How would you do that more quickly? And then finally, 42, you know, the Douglas Adams fans in the audience will know what that means. In Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they invent an incredibly large computer that takes millions of years to discover the meaning of life. And the answer comes out at 40 as 42. And when they all look around in a puzzled way, the computer tells them that the answer is the easy thing. It's the question that's difficult. And they build a new biological, even bigger computer, the Earth, to try and solve that problem. And that's incredibly insightful because actually the difficult thing when you're moving into novel design spaces is to know what the question is. And usually answering the question once you've articulated it properly is relatively easy. So you need in all of these things to find ways of allowing people to change completely the questions they're asking maybe hundreds of times before they really get the result that you want. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Rob, for that incredibly interesting and insightful talk. I think there's a lot of interesting chat on the stage. There's lots of questions I think will come out of that and really helps set up the discussions later in the breakout groups.